Well, welcome to the Effie Bag Show, and we're back again for the next hour. And of course, we've got a very special guest joining us tonight. But we'll go through, of course, the other hosts with me. Top left, with myself on the top of your, as you can see it, shall we say? Just trying to. Ali's actually trying to hide that she's eating biscuits. So we'll really.
No, it's a Kinder Bueno, not a biscuit. How dare you?
But at the top, of course, we've got Emily with us at the top. Welcome, Emily. And then, of course, one of the Cray twins in the middle next to our guest, of course, is Courtney. Welcome, Courtney.
Hi.
And at the bottom, the other Cray twin at the bottom is, of course, is Ali. And, of course, our very big special guest tonight, of course, is the one and only Mr. Liam Ridgewell. Welcome, Liam.
Thank you very much.
And the girls have been extremely excited all week. So I suppose we better start off with Emily. The floor is yours, dear.
Oh, I don't know how to start. Okay. Where do you prefer playing, Liam, UK or US?
Oh, good question. Do you know what? I really enjoyed my time in the US, I'm not allowed to. Really enjoyed it. It was really enjoyable. You could actually enjoy being a footballer, where here I think obviously it's scrutinized quite a lot on all the social media platforms. I'll put it down to in America someone would come up and buy you a pint. In America, to celebrate a game. Here, they'll go and take a photo and put it on Instagram to try and ham you. Don't get me wrong, I love playing here. Christ, I grew up here, but that's sort of the difference that you experience certainly in MLS.
Did you ever get used to calling it soccer, though? Because
I didn't.
Ugh,
I didn't say soccer. Horrendous. Couldn't do it. People used to say, why are you saying football? I'm like, because that's what it is. I'm like, no, you're talking about the wrong thing. I'm like, no, you're talking about the wrong thing.
I never understood, because NFL's a lot of hand stuff. It's a bad gesture, by the way. A lot of hand stuff going on. Why are they calling it football? I never get it.
Am I just saying NFL? Just say NFL. I say NFL, NBA, and then football. So, yeah, no, I didn't get used to it. Definitely not.
In Ireland, though, we call it soccer as well, because we've got football. We've got Gaelic football, so we're a bit like
that. Yeah. To be fair, I wouldn't go and touch Gaelic football. It's too rough, so I wouldn't say much about it. Shane Long used to play it quite a lot, and he's a tough cookie. So no, I wouldn't touch that. So I wouldn't argue.
What was it like though? Every time Portland Timbers scored, and there's some bloke cutting up wood behind the back of the goal.
Quality, unbelievable. I couldn't believe it. When I first heard it. I thought the stadium was like falling down, or something mad was going on. And I turned to the owner, I went, what is that noise? He went, oh, it's Timber Joe with a chainsaw. I said, what? Went, yeah, it's Timber Joe with a chainsaw walking up and down the stairs. I'm thinking, that's a hazard in itself. Like, you're going to get sued as soon as he falls over and chops someone's arm off or a leg off. So, it's quality. It's such a sort of special, iconic thing. I got one, thankfully, and made it into, one of my pals made it into a table. So it was really good to have. You know, you can put your any picture on it or whatever. So it was a real good sort of, you know, memorabilia type of thing. Yeah. The old man tried to get me to take it, bring it home, but you can't fit a, you know, 50 kg bit of log in your suitcase. You only get 25 kg coming home anyway, couldn't you? So
so your table is still in America?
Still there. Someone's using it to sit on, or probably, or wipe their trainers on, so.
Yeah, but you won some silverware in America as well.
We did, yeah. We won the MLS Cup. We won the Western Conference twice, and then won the MLS Cup once and got to a final. So, yeah, it was amazing. Obviously, to go there and sort of take the club to, you know, the pinnacle was amazing. Obviously, it was something out sort of we wanted to achieve when I first signed myself, the GM and the owner and the manager sat down. That was one thing we wanted to do. So, to actually achieve it in the first year was blinding. So, it was really, really enjoyable.
Have you got the same amount of titles though as Mr. Beckham?
I have, yeah. I mean, it's a hell of a claim to fame.
Only a drink after you said his name. Oh, we're on.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah, you're not.
What a dangerous thing to say, David. Oh, I did your full name as well there.
Don't stick his middle name in, Christ.
What's that? I suppose, is that one of the things, though, if yourself going over there, did you go over there after David?
Yeah, yeah, to me, he put it on the map, really, for everybody going. Obviously, you know, obviously there was a lot of people went before, but obviously to me, probably the first time I really, really heard about it. And then always wanted to play in America, but just sort of it was a throwaway comment, to be honest. And then obviously got the opportunity when I finished at West Brom and went up there and visited and looked around. And yeah, it was probably one of the best moves I ever made.
So, I mean, leaving West Brom now, but I mean, how did that sort of come about? Did it just sort of, was that an agent contact you or the club coming to you? Or
yeah, it was. They were actually after, so their criteria was an experienced Premier League left-footed centre-half. I didn't fit that criteria. They were going for Julian Lescott. I was just a backup. So they couldn't get Julian Lescott. He went to West Brom. And so I then took the reins and then, thankfully, stuck with it. And then, so it came about. I finished at West Brom. I was on my 30th birthday in Vegas. I literally just touched down in Vegas, got a phone call from my agent saying, Portland want to sign you. I'm like, who? Where? He went, if you look on the map, it's an hour and 45 minutes away, north of you. I said, all right. He said, they want to fly you up after your four-day trip and then show you around. If I wasn't in Vegas, I probably wouldn't have done it because it's, 13 hours on a connecting flight. So being such around the corner, it was a no-brainer, and I'm so glad I did.
I bet you were healthy after 4 days in Vegas going to sign.
I got in the motor. Pablo picked me up. I got in the motor and he went, whoa. He was like, I said, well, come from Vegas, didn't I? Christ, what do you expect? He went, good time. And I went, yeah, brilliant. So, yeah, it was a good start. He was a good power over there. So it was a good start to it, to be fair.
Right. Great place.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, it's something I needed, actually. The last year at West Brom, I didn't enjoy. So, sort of that summer was sort of a breakout, sort of just go and put the phone down, do something different. And, it was perfect, really.
But you started at Ali's club at West Ham. That your first pro club name?
No, it wasn't. That was, it was. I suppose I signed for them when I was 8 years of age. Charlton offered me to go there at like 6 or 7, after one of the soccer schools, to go and sign there. The old man was like, it's too early. And then 2 years later or a year later, I went and signed at West Ham. So it was a bit one then. But yeah, great time. Obviously, 8 till 14, that's where I started and learned and watched people. So used to go to Treadwilly, a couple of times a week, getting dropped there and coming back. So it was a good start off, that's for sure.
And your brother, go on.
Gus, I just had one question come in. Someone said, did Liam get any backlash for playing for Villa, the Blues and the Baggies?
This was my question as well. Man, I like to live dangerously, Liam. I like to see it.
Do you know what? To be fair, I didn't have too much. I found a for sale sign next to my car. Whether it was whacked over my car one night after a drunken night, it's debatable. I probably was, but that's the only sort of backlash I had from it. Being a London lad going up there, I didn't exactly leave and shoved it down anyone's throat or sort of show off about it. I left because I wasn't playing at Villa and I wanted to play, Premier League football. So I think a lot of people respected that. A lot of people on the night out would sort of say things from afar and sort of chirp about it. And then when they'd either talk to me, they sort of come round, but it weren't sort of weren't mad backlash, no.
Good.
So I'm just tweeting everything out as we're going along.
are you adding the Birmingham fans? Is that what you're doing? You want to wile up a little bit? Liam said you're shit.
Let's get some backlash going. That's right, yeah.
Christ, I'm awake.
Anything for some listeners, eh?
And is there any team that you would have really liked to play for, but either the opportunity didn't come or it just didn't work out with you?
So I was a QPR fan as a kid. So I'd love to have played for QPR. Sort of that would have been a real treat. Newcastle would have been one. I don't know. I just feel like that. Every time I went to Newcastle, just stadium, liked the kit, loved the fans. Sort of that. I nearly had a chance to go there. I think it might have been before I went to West Brom, but just didn't work out. So Newcastle would have been a good one that I'd love to have done. But QPR, being a fan of them, I tried to go there sort of in a later stage of my career, but I didn't want the old fart. So it didn't work out, sadly.
But I mean, out of those sort of the English clubs you were at, though, which one would you have said you had the most successful time at?
I mean, obviously, Birmingham was the most successful time. Obviously, you know, winning the Carling Cup, obviously that was, you know, one of, or if not, yeah, you know, the biggest one, obviously, that and the Emirates Cup. But I spoke to someone today, and it's such a tough one to call because, you know, Villa gave my debut and, you know, put so much into me. So that was such a, you know, unbelievable thing. You know, Birmingham, I went to there and won the Carling Cup. And then when Birmingham got relegated, I moved to West Brom and they sort of, you know, gave me Premier League football back. So I've got fond memories of all, but probably Birmingham was probably the biggest one for me. Most enjoyable time. It was all around the similar age, all going for the same goal of like staying in the Premier League. And then obviously we won the Carling Cup. So if I had to tip it over of all three, it'd probably be Birmingham. For the Carling Cup win, really.
What was that day like? For me, it was horrific, but I mean, for you, it was really, really good.
I'm guessing you're an Arsenal fan. That's a good start. I wish you told me at the start. It'd been fantastic. Unreal. But to beat them as well, because they turned up thinking they were just going to stroll it. So it was absolutely quality to actually win. And winning that style right at the end, you know, it's not like we just scored at the start and it just sort of dragged. Literally at the end, you know, won the last kick of the game and sort of the celebration then could carry on from that. So, yeah, it was, yeah, one that you never forget, obviously. And the more Arsenal fans you meet, the better and better it gets.
But well, I mean, with that though, I mean, what was the, on that day, what was the build-up like on that day? I mean
for us, obviously,
we've actually got somebody here that's been to Wembley as well, see, so that...
there you go.
Big time down there.
He
doesn't mention it much though, Liam. It's fine.
You know, for us, it was like, you know, probably the only opportunity we was going to win a major honour. You know, a lot of us weren't necessarily going to play for a big six team, big four team, because they, you know, mostly get to cup finals or win leagues. So it was, you know, for us, it was once in a lifetime opportunity. So the build-up, you know, the suits, getting to the hotel, sorting tickets, you know, sorting families, making sure everyone was all right and, you know, going to the stadium in our suits and getting changed and we'll get out on the pitch. Arsenal didn't do that. It turned up in their tracksuits and just went to the change room, didn't even go and look at the pitch and just, you know, walked in, strolled out, you know. So it was, it was the whole, you know, I used to watch it on Match of the Day or, I don't know, BBC when they used to watch them go and get their suits and they do a song and all that. So, you know, that was for me. I'm sure it was for a lot of other people. So it was, yeah, it was an incredible sort of, you know, week, 2 weeks, certainly build up to it.
Well, someone's just come in and put in this, and you're going to love this one, Liam. I think this is probably one of the, might be one of the better comments you've ever had, maybe. Depends on how you look at it. But it's just that just seen Liam's picture on Wikipedia profile, couldn't tell if it was him or Tom Hardy.
I genuinely coked. Oh god, that was awful. You should have warned me, Dave. I was drinking then.
Someone's had too much to drink, surely. Someone's cracked on well early. It's a Friday, you know what I mean?
Friday night,
the drinking midday. Tell you what, I love them though. Thank you very much, whoever that is.
That's Adam Silver, and he's a secretary down at Redbridge Football Club, and a loyal West Ham fan. Mate.
Can we get Tom Hardy on here, do you reckon?
We can have a
see a looky likey
competition.
Yeah, that's a good show. Somebody tweet him quickly now.
please don't do a looky likey competition. That's all I need.
Christ, don't do that. Well, the girl's best friend Danny's just come in and said, what does Liam think of the current situation with Dover in National League?
Yeah, obviously, it's a massive shame, obviously, for us. Big, big shame not being able to train and play. But, you know, it just comes down, the chairman ain't got the money. You know, and if he ain't got the money, then he can't afford to keep playing people and keep it going. You know, that's simple, really. If someone got the money to pay the mortgage or pay stuff, then you ain't going to pay it. Mm. So, you know, obviously a lot of things were promised at the start of the season, what I weren't privy to. You know, I came in a bit later, and I'm sure a lot of people aren't privy to, but, you know, there was grants talked about and things like that. So they haven't come up with it. He can't afford it no more. So, you know, we sort of suffer. So it's annoying, but do you know what? It'll be a new season next season, and, you know, we'll be knuckling down to get going.
Because we
Dover usually get through the gates on average?
Do you know what? I don't know, because I joined with no fans, which is mental. It's the first time ever I've like been in a stadium with no fans. So I joined, and you got to the ground and there's no one there, and I thought, God, this is weird. Like, so strange. Really, really strange. And then you don't ask, do you? Sort of, you don't ask how many do we get. So it'd be quite good if that person who tweeted in could let us know. That'd be a good answer to that question.
Well, if Danny knows, I'm not sure. But with the actual situation, because we had this discussion with the three vice chairmen on Monday night on the other show, and we said to him, you know, look, you know, if the likes of Dover are pulling out from the season from the National League and a couple of the others, what happens to Dover next season? Do they stay in the National League? Do they get relegated because of the fact that, you know, they haven't fulfilled a season?
Fulfilled their fixtures, yeah.
Fulfilled fixtures. Do all the points that they did gain, do they get given back to the teams that lost them? And I think one of the vice chairmen said that the one of the teams that would be in the best place would be Eastleigh, because I think they lost 7 points to the teams that have actually... you know, they've actually said they ain't going to play anymore, but I don't know. What?
I don't think they got Scooby. I don't think they know what to do. I literally don't think they know what to do with the situation, because if there was money promised to the chairman, then it was promised. Mm-hmm. So the chairman isn't doing any wrongdoing. He just can't afford no more. So if he was promised the money and now it's not forthcoming, then what's he meant to do? So that's why I don't think they know what to do. They literally don't know what to do to either carry the season on or get Dover back in or find Dover or fine us or chuck us out or deduct us for next season.
It's not only the grants you're missing out on, it's your, like, it's the bar, it's the people coming in, it's the club shop. Like, everything is gone. It's not just, like...
No, it's not just a team. No.
Yeah, so it's hard on everyone. And like, I mean, I obviously experienced a bit of time at Dover, and it's just the weirdest situation walking into an empty stadium at that level. Yeah, like, when we went to Wrexham, I was like, where's all these people?
It's surreal. It's so surreal having anyone there. It's really weird, and it's a massive shame, because obviously, you know, you get players out of, you know, the National League that, you know, keep going up and, you know, progressing through the leagues, and it's a strange situation, and you're sort of in limbo. We was in limbo every single day, every single week, not knowing week to week whether we was going to be playing, carrying on training, and the boys are in the same position. So, you know, even they are not knowing what's going on. If we don't know what's going on, they're even more in the dark, you know, and people might say, well, they should just be training and playing, you know, and don't worry about it. Of course you do. You know, people have got bills to pay and they're wondering if they're going to be coming in the next day. So it's a tough situation that sort of, you know, hopefully will rectify itself sooner rather than later.
I've just had a look, and this might not be true, because not everything that's on Wikipedia is true, but I mean, but
if it's on mine, it's definitely not true unless it's good.
Unless you look like Tom Hardy.
It depends how you look at it. It says on a for Aston Villa, the day after scoring for England under-19s in a 2-2 draw against Yugoslavia in October 2002, Liam was loaned out to AFC Bournemouth. So if that's the correct, case, yeah. you're on a massive high from scoring from England, you go back to Aston Villa and then they loan you out to Bournemouth.
Yeah. Well, the high kept going, because obviously when you get loaned out, it's normally sort of a make or break. So you're thinking, ooh, the manager's sort of thinking me for the first team, so you're buzzing, you know, and then you get down there and, you know, realise you're playing Leighton Orient and the geezer's 6'7", you're thinking, uh-oh, here comes trouble in my first game. So, you're sort of wet behind the ears, but you grow up quite quickly. So yeah, you go from a buzz to then getting loaned out and you're thinking, oh, quality. So yeah, now that was a buzz, yeah.
Can you remember you made your debut against for Bournemouth?
It wasn't Leighton Orient, was it?
No.
No, I can't remember, which is mad.
You might have even played them for Dover this season, but there you go. So that's a 2-1 win over Hartlepool.
Oh, wow.
On the 30th.
Could have been something Nick has spoke about. Is that what it was, Hartlepool?
Yes, that's what it says on Wikipedia, whether that's true or not, who knows?
Did Trick play for Hartlepool?
He did. I'm sure he played for him. I know he managed him now. Maybe not at the same time, but that's at least we could have had a 5-minute chat about Hartlepool, maybe.
So can you remember who your debut was for Aston Villa?
Blackburn.
Can you remember the score?
Yeah, we lost like 4-1 or something.
Spot on, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I remember that because I came on. Dwight York was playing for Blackburn. Obviously, that's a Villa legend. Hmm. He left, obviously, and then maybe it's United, then found himself at Blackburn. I saw him, obviously, he was playing. When I was coming on, I thought, oh, if you smash Dwight York in front of the Holt end, you'll be an absolute legend. So as he got the ball, he's like sort of got on the touchline. I thought, here's your chance, Ridge. Go on in. Charged at him. He done me with a trick. I slid by him. He got round me and just mugged me off. And I don't know if they scored or whatever. And I thought, oh, there's a lesson for you.
Oh, no. Defending 1-1, stay on your feet.
Yeah, there you go.
What was your transition like from the youth to the first team? I'm always very intrigued about this.
Say that again, Courtney. What was that?
Like your transition going into from obviously the reserves or 23s or something like that.
Yeah. I always the transition was quite good because obviously back in the day, the training ground was always, our training room was next to the first teams. And obviously we got to clean their boots and we ate with them every day and things like that. So we was around them. So the transition was, we already knew them. So it was quite good. And obviously they'd pick players out every now and again if they needed extra players. So the transition was quite easy. Yeah, it was daunting when I got the phone call to say, you're with us now. You know, you've got to come and get... The worst was get changing room. Yeah. You know, you go from one changing room and then you go into their changing room. It's like a new school day. You know, first day of school, you walk in and people... like shuffle over to make sure you don't come and sit next to them, or they want more space. So you're looking around thinking, please help me someone, please just find a spot to someone. So that's probably the only hardest part, but you know, it was quite easy then because he was in around them anyway, which was great. So the transition was relatively easy. And obviously on a playing part, you know, you were training with them, the reserves back then, you were playing with most of the senior pros anyway. Certainly in reserve team level. So, you know, the playing part, you fit straight in, really.
Oh, cool.
I've got two dates for you, Liam. See if they stick in your mind. 15th of January, 2005. And the 10th of April, 2005.
2005, I'd moved to Birmingham.
According to this was for Villa.
Oh, I'd not moved to Birmingham yet. 2005.
Well, this is on January the 15th, 2005, Liam scored his first professional goal, heading in Solano's cross in the 9th minute to open up
Norwich.
To open a 3-0 win over Norwich. April the 10th, which I'm more interested in, is what happened. In a 1-1 draw with rivals West Brom, he and opponent Jonathan Green sent off a headbutt.
Oh, yeah. Jonathan Green in what they call it was basically an Eskimo kiss. It wasn't even headbutting. It was pathetic. Nowadays, you'd have been sent off even before we got going. But like 5 years after it, it was an Eskimo kiss. It was just stupid. It was just one of them ones where it's a derby and you sort of rolled up. I stood up, or he stood up because I'd tackled him, I think. And so we sort of went head to head. Yeah, and we got sent off. And they scored. I think last few minutes they might have scored right at the death, maybe, I think.
Yeah,
I think I'll lead on from there. And I'll ask you, obviously, luckily we have a tussle, isn't it? Defenders always do. Who's the hardest player you ever played against?
Oh, the late great Bupa Diop now, actually. So yeah, he was like him and Roy Keane were the two people that scared me on the pitch. Two people that
you
ever
have a little tussle with Roy Keane?
You
fancy a little bit?
Never. I had butted Ronaldo in the cock, and as I turned round and come back, Roy Keane was there giving me absolute pelters, saying, "Who do you think you are?" And I thought, "Oh, do you give him some back?" And I thought, "Nah, just get away from him. Nah, sod that." Bupa Diop, we played him at Craven Cottage. Mm. And I think I'd sort of done one of my trademark jump up and sort of stud him in the back while headering the ball, sort of leave a marker. And as I did it, landed, he turned around and went, "I'll see you in the tunnel." And I thought, "Oh, you're banging trouble. Oh my God."
You hang back a little bit as you're walking in. Like, what is this? Oh, my laces are a bit dodgy.
I was the last one. I was the last one in. He'd gone by that time. I was absolutely buzzing.
that's the equivalent of a car park shout in non-league, isn't it? I'll see you in the car park.
Basically, I'll see you in the car park. Yeah, yeah.
Hear that. So, embarrassing.
He scared me. The wardrobe.
I'm disappointed you didn't have a tussle with Roy.
Nah.
You know what? I've seen Roy Keane with Michael Richards. He's lovely, really.
He's
in a cuddle. So he got a little cuddle. You loved it.
He's cultural as a pundit. Imagine what he was like as a player. Christ on a bike.
He's calmed down now.
All I would say to you, Emily, is don't keep saying tussle, because in your accent, it doesn't sound like tussle at all. What you just said to Liam... No. But you said, I'm surprised you didn't like a tussle with Roy Keane. It sounded completely different.
David, take your mind out of the gutter. This is not called the FBI show for nothing.
No. Not Monday night now, David.
Yeah, thanks very much.
It's a clean-cut and wholesome show. So we asked players about things like giving Roy Keane a little cuddle.
Come here, Roy.
Yeah. It's all he wants, a little cuddle and a bit of reassurance. It's all going to be fine. Oh, not shouting at Jamie Redknapp. Poor Jamie Redknapp, eh?
Oh, no.
All his videos have gone on about that.
And he's calmed down now, Roy.
Yeah. What? He's from My Ross in Cork. My Ross is one of the roughest areas you will ever go to in your life. Like, you don't walk through My Ross, you run through My Ross. It's as rough as a bear's arse, honestly.
Oh, wow.
You know Leah's from Bexley Heath, didn't you, mate? Honestly.
Yeah.
I've been Bexley on my own. It's pretty rough, honestly.
I mean, striker-wise, though, Liam, I mean, who was the best striker you come up against?
Ruud van Nistelrooy. He was the toughest one I ever played against, yeah. You know, the likes of, obviously, Henri. And
that's
like Ronaldo.
On the program, please. Don't use that name on this program.
I'm going to get him one in a few weeks. You watch.
They played out on the wing, so you didn't really come up against him. But Ruud van Nistelrooy was—you never saw him. Someone I came off across, like, come off the pitch with like a headache with, like, take two headache tablets because you just didn't see him. He was on your shoulder all the time. It's crazy. So, yeah.
That's probably like Bergkamp. Did you? Come on, guys, Tim.
He played in front. I used to love a centre forward that played in front of me, because then I could sort of get a little, have a little tussle with him.
You're only showing off that you can say that.
But no, Ruud stood behind you. You never see him all game.
I must say, when I was growing up, I used to absolutely love Van Nistelrooy. Honestly, I had a proper little crush on him as well. I used to get so much stick for it. Indoor. Him, you got Beckham and Van Nistelrooy. Well, I had to get into that, but can't count potatoes. Growing up, I was young, innit?
Yeah, he was unreal. He was a joke.
So you was talking about Portland Timbers and about winning it with Portland Timbers, but I've just seen on here that you know, one of your last games, your final game for them was a 2-0 defeat in the final against Atlanta. I mean, what was you expecting to win that game? Was that a game that you was going into thinking you were the favourites to win it, or?
We expected ourselves to win it, but relatively, they spent a lot of money to get to, you know, I think it was their second season. They might have lost in the final season before, spent a lot of money, was in a new stadium, got a lot of good players like Almiron, who's obviously at Newcastle now, Martinez, who's a good centre-forward. So they were probably favourites going in, because they was playing at home. But obviously, we expected ourselves to win. But yeah, it was a shame, obviously, I couldn't sort of win two before my, you know, time to come home was up. So, yeah, it was a tough one to take, to be fair.
Was that a bigger, which was, I'm just going to say a silly question to some people, but what was the bigger day, the MLS Cup final or the League Cup final?
It's not a silly question because it's such a tough one to call. You know, for Birmingham being where we was, where, you know, no one gives us a hope in hell. So that was made it such a big day. But for Portland, you know, it was, you know, a team that would, you know, sort of come out of the shadows to go and win a major trophy. So the bigger day was probably the Carling Cup win, because obviously there was 95,000 people there. You know, we played at Columbus Crew and there was, I think they only fit probably 15,000 in their stadium. So obviously that made it sort of a bigger game. But the Atlanta one, you know, they had 85,000 there. It was enclosed as well. So you couldn't even speak to your centre-half partner. You couldn't hear him.
Oh, wow.
How did you find the American stadium? So they look crazy from this end. I've never been. I'm dying to get out there to go and see Beckham's team, to be honest. It's a bit of a sad one, but...
Yeah. No, it's well worth it. It's definitely like that. Every new team that comes in, they raise the bar.
Mm.
They always raise the bar to try and be better than the other team that came in. So it's sort of a little flame, you know what I mean, ready to just take off sort of thing. So it's growing, it's getting bigger. They're sort of investing in the youth now and in their sort of training grounds and their system to try and make players at their own team. So it's going the right way.
Mm. And what was your favourite competition to play in over here? As in, like, FA Cup, that kind of thing, or the Premier League?
Yeah, I'd say Premier League. I always enjoyed the FA Cup. The FA Cup was obviously, growing up, was obviously a big competition. You know, it was always on, you know, it was always on BBC One, something you could always watch. That was a real good competition to play in. I think we only got to the quarters as much as I can remember. But obviously, the Premier League was the creme de la creme, you know, it's something that I'd always grown up watching and wanting to play in. So I'd say probably the Prem was the one, really.
And when you were growing up watching football, like, who was your hero? Who did you really rate as a player? Not someone you played with, but someone you watched.
No, growing up, I was a centre forward. A little bit crazy. So I used to, my players were Robbie Fowler. I used to wear the same sticker over my nose that he used to wear. I think a lot of people did.
Did you find it effective?
On this bugle, I mean, yeah, it's got anything to be affected of and on there, Christ. But no, it did work. It opened it up, to be fair. Yeah, it was quite good. It made me score a lot of goals, so I'll put it down to that. Ian Wright was another one, and Celes Ferdinand. Celes, obviously, for QPR, it was probably a big one for me. So them centre forwards. And then as I sort of got a bit older, Rio Ferdinand was the one I sort of watched and loved.
Did they influence your game, do you find? Obviously, like I'm saying, like the Rio, influences him, or was somebody else kind of influenced your game?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, because he was obviously a ball-playing centre-half, and obviously I watched him at West Ham and watched him sort of go through the ranks and how he was, you know, and how he just liked to be calm on the ball and how he played. I tried to emulate that, to try and be good on the ball and try and, you know, sort of pass out from the back. You know, that was the way football was progressing. So I tried to watch him and try and emulate that. So, you know, that was good, obviously, to watch him at West Ham. And then, you know, getting to play against him was obviously, you know, amazing to get up close and personal, really.
When would you pull yourself together, though, in big games when you're watching players and be like, right, I'm not here to watch him, I'm here to play against him. But can you not help being a bit like, Jesus, he's fantastic?
Yeah, I used to go up like on corners and stuff, and so he'd mark me every now and again. I think, God, it's Rio. Like, you stand there and look at me and think, oh, it's Rio Ferdinand. Christ, you know, like, and then you got to ask for their shirt. I didn't ask for many people's shirts. I didn't really like to show them that respect. So Rio was the one that I did get. Rio, like John Terry, Robbie Fowler. Like, that was probably one of the best one that I probably got. So it's, yeah, it was you do stand there and go, oh, Rio Ferdinand.
Yeah. Mad. When did you change from a striker to a defender?
As soon as people recognised that I wasn't quick enough, and I slowly started moving back further and further and further.
What was that at the beginning?
You are.
What was your view on that at the beginning? Because obviously some people don't like that.
Yeah, no, some people didn't like it. Obviously, centre forward I loved, but as I got a bit older, I ended up moving to central midfield, which I loved even more. I liked, you know, tackling. I liked getting about, and I liked going box to box. Something I sort of prided myself on. I could score a goal, so love that. But I got to about 13, 14, when all the other boys were starting to, you know, hit puberty and get a lot bigger, a lot stronger, a lot more powerful, and I was getting lost. So when I went to Villa, they moved me back to left centre half of a three to keep me out of the way, so I didn't, you know, my confidence didn't dip, and I sort of got out of the way of the big boys. So probably the best thing they ever did for me, really. And it was, yeah, it obviously shaped my career, but it was a bit like, I want to be in there, you know, I want to go forward. So, but obviously I soon realised that I weren't big enough and strong enough until I then developed myself.
Touching on the sort of development of career, who was the manager that you found sort of got to you most or made your career bloom, and who didn't do that so much?
Early days, I mean, I had two managers, Ken McDonald and Tony McAndrew, in my like reserve team under 19s level. They were sort of shaped my, you know, footballing career in sort of, you know, being tough and getting through things. If I couldn't handle them, I weren't going to handle 90,000 people screaming. So they sort of shaped me and, you know, guided me through it, as much as it was sort of tough love, but they sort of guided and shaped it. Someone that didn't fit well with my career, Martin O'Neill, didn't see eye to eye, didn't get on. And, you know, one of the main reasons I left Villa at that time. So, you know, sort of contrasting, but yeah, just didn't fit in and didn't really work that well.
That happens in football, sadly, doesn't it, unfortunately?
Oh, yeah, you meet loads of people that don't like you, or you don't like them, or you don't fit their style, and it's just part and part of football. You just get on with it and, you know, you move on. That's any shape of form of life. You get that everywhere you go.
But I'm going to ask you mildly, unlike me to be quite serious, I think, on this, but I'm going to ask you, because you mentioned about being scrutinised earlier on, particularly kind of media. I'm not going to mention the paper's name, because I refuse to mention the paper's name for what they get up to in the past. But you had quite a negative incident, unfortunately, for yourself, with a picture that came out.
Yeah.
You wrapping your bottom with a certain certain kind of money.
Certain currency. No,
yeah.
I mean, 20 quid's a good amount. I mean, I'll use 50 for me personally.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can't count for taste, can you, on people? But how do you, obviously, you footballers then probably get it more now, but equally, you want to remember getting scrutinised so much. How did you find that, like, sort of from yourself? How did it come about?
Yeah, it was like the start of, I feel like, really start of sort of scrutinising. I remember Phil Barsley getting the same treatment either a couple of weeks before or a couple of weeks after. It was a shock, massive shock, because it was a joke between two friends. I'd bet him on a bet on something on X Factor. He come in and slung the money at me. And, you know, I was basically taking the piss that he'd had to owe me money. He ain't paid for nothing in his life. He ain't paid for anything in his being. So it was great to actually get some money off him. It was fantastic. But we put it on our BBM statuses saying, oh, unlucky to my mate Matt, for our mates to sort of take the mickey out of him. Yeah. And then suddenly, a year later, it finds itself in that, so you know, that said paper. Mm. So it didn't really affect me that much, because I knew the real story behind it.
Mm.
It affected my mum, because she was getting knocks on the door from newspapers saying, oh, what do you think of this?
Mm.
You know, she had to go into work and things like that. You know, obviously that was probably the worst part. But didn't really affect me going forward. When I got back into West Brom, as it was, the boys had filled my locker with a load of toilet roll and things like that. And as soon as I opened it, it all fell out. So, you know, I think people took it for what it was, and as it was a joke, you know, and, you know, any a lot of people have done it. But obviously I just got outed. And that's what I say about the social media or that media side, which is a shame, really.
It is. I mean, obviously, I didn't know the incident about it being sort of leaked by a friend. How did you find that side of it? That must be really hard.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's what I mean. I don't know whether it was leaked by a friend. We don't know who it was. It was on our BBM statuses.
Yeah.
So anyone could take that picture. Yeah, do you remember when you had that
You're
picture?
You're a bit young for that,
rack?
Courtney. It should be a thing we've done when we were younger.
BBM.
And the internet. And the internet, Christ. So anyone could crop that picture.
Yeah.
So anyone could have sent that off. So, you know, we didn't know it was. Obviously, I asked said newspaper, but they wouldn't tell me. So it was a, it was one of them really. But you know what? Good luck to whoever went and got a little bit of money out of it. I'm sure that they would reap the rewards, and I'm sure it's come back round them to bite them in their own arse at some point.
It's so bad though, isn't it? Though you can have a bit of crack and a bit of a laugh. Oh, no pun intended.
Sorry, I had to give a little segue for Ems to get a bit of a crack base.
Like being sly and sneaky about it, it's ridiculous.
I understand that, you know, the footballers got a reputation, you know, for flaunting money or getting, you know, doing, you know, stupid amounts of money and stuff like that. But it wasn't that. It was a joke between two mates that, again, like I say, he hadn't paid for anything for 10 years. So to get money off him was that unbelievable. You know, to get money off him the way the bet was, I betted on an X Factor contestant from the very start and said he was going to win. It was a country and Western person. And it went on for 10 weeks and he actually won. I picked him from the start. If I'd put money on it, I probably won like 100 grand off a pound or something. But it's just one of them things. And you just, you know, it's football and they've got to try and sell newspapers. And
well, the good news is, Liam, at least it wasn't one of the new 20s because they're useless, aren't they, mate? All that plastic and stuff. Imagine using
that. I didn't even wipe my arse with it. That's what, I just held it closely. That's the worst thing.
Well, Frank Mays come in and said, what were the grounds that Liam loved and hated to visit?
Oh, hated to visit Everton. The fans, they were so close. I loved it, but I hated it. They were so close and you got so much stick off them. I remember warming up a couple of times. There's one geezer in the front who just wouldn't stop. He just on and on and on and on and on. You're thinking, oh, mate, just shut up, we are. But he just give you pelters. So... loved it, but hated it as well because obviously them, you know, sort of passionate fans. Place I loved, Old Trafford was one I grew up watching United win every single thing. So actually to go and play at Old Trafford was incredible. And I, like I said, Newcastle was another big one. You know, I didn't support Newcastle or anything like that. Just I found that, you know, the supporters were amazing and the stadium was incredible. So just one I really enjoyed playing at.
Not Upton Park now.
I love playing at Upton Park. Yeah.
Dave, pick him off. Do a Jackie Weaver straight off.
I love Upton Park because that was my most scored club against that I'd through my career, West Ham. So loved it there.
Sorry, Matt. Dave, quickly. Where's the button? Let me find it. Where is it?
You've
got a big kickoff button here.
You must have enjoyed Anfield.
Yeah, loved Anfield. You know, I loved it because obviously you could hear the crowd singing from when you were coming down the tunnel. But it wasn't... I loved it, yeah. But it wasn't the Old Trafford that I'd know, sort of grown up with, because they were the team that were I'd always watched in Champions League and, you know, something you'd always watch. So that's sort of the comparison for me. But loved it.
Old Trafford's the only ground that I ever felt really unsafe at. I need to get out of here. I need to get out of here fast.
What? You've never been Millwall girl, have you?
I got stuck in that Millwall Everton brawl, didn't I? But even after that, I was...
I heard when you started the Port Ems. And you poor coffee over poor Stephen Gerrard. I think it's a link here. It's you.
Stop telling people that you scalded Stephen Gerrard, please.
Poor Stephen Gerrard. When he had a bad World Cup, you poured coffee over the poor geezer.
I didn't. It was tea and I didn't spill it. Thank you very much.
How did you deal with the kind of comments and the negativity that would come from fans and stuff? Obviously, you blocked them out and that, but was there times where any of them really got to you?
Do you know what? Not really. I quite enjoy all that. I'm not going to lie to you. Even when I, you know, met them in the stadium and like heard them in the grounds or sort of met them out, I'd enjoy it. I'd sort of use it as a positive to sort of shut them up. Anything on social media, one, I'll either go and delete it straight away or I'll just block them. So, you know, it's like, if you've got a problem with me, why are you following me? Why look at my photos? Why even bother your day? So I'll just block you straight away or I'll delete it. So I do find it hard with people about talking about the social media and the bad side of it, because you can delete it and you can come off it. But I do understand that it does affect people in different ways. But for me, it was just, one, I enjoyed it if I've met people or had them in the stadium, or two, I'd just delete it off my Instagram or block them that they can't then do it again. And if they want to go and re-add themselves as another one, then I'll block that as well. Mm. But, you know, I know there's different scales, so I haven't exactly had loads, but that's how I sort of dealt with it, really.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you, sorry, Dave, I just wanted to ask Liam this as a younger player, because obviously, like, I didn't want to ask Tony because he's obviously an older man and it might be a bit disrespectful. And this might be so controversial because I know, like, you're happily married and everything, but the question I'm going to ask you is, when you're on a night out and women are like table hanging and da da da, all this palaver, and then the next morning you see like a footballer fondle someone or did this, like, do you, I personally, and this is going to get serious backlash, and I know it is, when a girl calls rape, I genuinely find it very hard to believe when it's linked to a sports person. Let me explain why. Because these girls see the WAG era and they're like, oh yeah, I want to live a multimillionaire lifestyle. They go off and they shag someone, and then the next morning he's like, yeah, see you later, love. And they're like, this wasn't meant to happen. And they panic, which is fine. Mm.
Yeah.
But what, as a younger footballer, what's your take on the whole thing? And were you ever paranoid about stuff like that when you were single, obviously? Were you ever paranoid about stuff like that?
Yeah, we was, because we were obviously given the stories before we went out and obviously told about it. Listen, we enjoyed it because, you know, you go from being sort of a nobody that no one knows, and you're suddenly in a VIP table that people are bringing girls up to your table saying, do you want girls coming to your table? So you're thinking, what do you mean, girls have asked to come up into this place? You're thinking, this is just mental. Or you see them sort of standing at the ropes. It's enjoyable to start off with, you know, obviously the attention and all that. But in the end, it's sort of just, you just look and think, come on now. Like, just, it's a shame. You know, it's a shame that people are waiting around to either go on someone else's table to be bought drinks and potentially having to go and, you know, kiss and cuddle with people just because they bought drinks. So it's something that you don't really get used to, because it's such a strange thing, but obviously it does happen. So it's sort of a mad concept, really.
To be fair, Liam, London drinks are very expensive.
Yeah. Hey, if I could get someone else to buy
I'm
my
just
drink,
saying, I, I'm just I saying, £15 for one pina colada, and it's mainly ice.
It's just
well, I'm not lying. I'm getting the drink. I'm taking the glass home. I'm probably taking a chair home with me. Honestly, I'm not gonna lie. It is what it is, isn't it? I'll probably just put a bottle of tequila while I'm at it too.
It's a concept I can't get my head around. I can't get my head around standing on someone's table, drinking their booze all night, and then fucking off. Like, I just can't get my head around it. I don't know if I was raised as a Catholic in Ireland, or
if
I just can't get my head around
it.
I have a hard job in going onto one of my friends' tables and drinking their drink. If we was in a bar or something, my pals would go, oh, so and so's over there, and I know them through football, but they're not necessarily my mate. They'd go, oh, come over. And I'd be like, no, I was going to stand at the bar. unless I'm really tapped out or something, I'm just going to stand at the bar. So it's mad that the rope girls or the table girls is such a strange. When you first have a geezer come up to you and say, do you want any girls on your table? You think, what do you mean? What are you talking about? And he goes, well, I can go out and get you some girls and bring them back if you want. You're like, what? Yeah, it's just sort of our clubs have gone and our it's gone, really, I suppose.
Talking it, I have to buy my own drink. This is quite depressing to hear this news to these broke girls.
I'm happy.
My own it's expensive, isn't it, called Prosecco these days, mate? I don't know about this. I'm not happy. got a lot of my agent's in trouble, basically, Liam, now.
That's why I go to the venue. You get WKDs.
Oh,
you
know what? I've had some cracking nights out there. I get drunk on a Smirnoff Ice and a half. So I don't know why I'm giving it a big one. I can't drink anyway. Genetically can't drink. You might earn it, I suppose.
Liam, I was there's a program on Talk Sport, and it's on there, and it normally airs on Sunday morning. And I might be completely wrong, and I might have been completely dreaming it. I don't know, but I listen to every sort of every Sunday morning as I'm on the way to work.
Talk Sport is a real show. Is that what you mean?
No. There's a show on there with Gary Bloom called on the Sporting Couch. Have you done one of those with him?
No, not with him. No, I've done a bit of Talk Sport, but never done that one. Okay. Must not be famous enough for that one.
You're on the best show anyway, Liam.
Not as good as us.
Old that's Bloom, right. We don't talk about Prosecco and rope girls and notes on your bum, do they?
Come on, venues and WKDs, that's right.
The cheese floor, 1 a.m. goes off. That Michael Jackson thing comes on, moonwalks on. You're letting the team down, mate. Honestly, between 1 and 2 a.m., there's a conga around the cheese floor. Michael Jackson, I'll say Michael Jackson. It didn't look much like him, but, you know, you could sing a bit like him. We're walking along. Everyone's just getting
drunk. So you've not been?
I've only been once.
Oh.
You're not even in non-league, mate. How can you non-league if you've never been to venue?
I was really proud of myself. So I was a venue virgin for 10 years because I've lived in London for 10 years. And then just before lockdown, I went and I was like, damn. And it was really bad because it was Friday night, only one floor was open.
No one goes Friday night, mate.
My pal owns it. My Woodsy's pal owns it, Eddie.
Oh,
his old man owns it and he runs it. And we got in to put Mariah Carey and the Snow on in March.
Did you? Liam, give me a shout next time, mate. All the other 30s will be there, mate. I'll tell you what, lock down. 21st of June. We're all straight down venue. Only over 30s.
It's going to be
I can't come. Liam, we will be your role girls.
Yeah, there you go.
Did someone buy me WKD?
No, you're not the girls. No, thank you.
Did you?
That's long gone.
On a sort of semi-funny side of it, I suppose. Did you know that your career was over when you went down and played at Southend?
Yeah, I mean.
Did you play for Southend? Did you play a game for them?
I played 55 minutes.
Better than no minutes, mate,
isn't it? Yeah, it didn't pan out the way I thought it was going to pan out. that's as much as I'm allowed to say about it, yeah.
Did when you were in the MLS and you used to come home on your breaks and stuff and you played for a couple of clubs over here, did Portland mind that you were playing over here? Like, were they worried about injury or...?
No, to be fair, no, they weren't. The first year I did it, I went to Wigan. Second year was at Brighton, which was amazing. No, they weren't. Obviously, they were, you know, watch yourself if you feel any niggles and blah, blah, blah. But obviously, for my side of it, it kept my fitness up, kept me doing stuff because I was used to doing that over Christmas. For their side, you know, for their months, the wage bill for them would change. And obviously, you know, obviously the loan club would take that over. So it would sort of help the club out maybe. So, and it got me to, I could spend a little bit more time with my family. Obviously, I didn't go over there with my eldest two kids didn't come with me. I'm not with their mum. Mm. So, they only used to come over at summer and Easter time. So I got to spend a little bit more time with them. So it sort of helped me out while they were doing pre-season I was playing. So really enjoyable times, especially Brighton. It was amazing, amazing club.
What if you was to take sort of some of those MLS clubs, say Portland Timbers, playing for them, if you actually took them out and brought them into British football, where would you say they would fit on in British football?
They'd be sort of middle bottom champ, or sort of top League One. Mm. I honestly do believe that. You know, the caliber of players that we had and the standard, what it was. They're the types of games you like. It was, yeah. It takes them getting used to because it was a quicker game over here, obviously. But you know, the teams that I played in, I think that level would be sort of spot on. Mm.
Was it a lot? Was it a lot to get used to though, coming out of sort of British football, as you said, that with the hustle and bustle of sort of Premier League, et cetera, et cetera, and then going into MLS?
Take them getting used to. Yeah, it took some getting used to for me to learn, you know, the players around me and how we were playing. You know, obviously for myself, I was brought in to be sort of like that leader and that experience of playing in the Premier League and try and bring that to the team. So, you know, obviously it made me demanding. It made me demanding of the team and the players. So, you know, that's what sort of brought it that way. But it took some getting used to. You know, you're playing in 1 week, you could be playing in freezing cold, and then you suddenly fly to DC and you're 95% humidity and 90 degree heat. So it don't suit me, but you know, that's things you got to get used to. Obviously.
Training wise?
Sorry, say it again, Courtney. My headphones died and now it's come onto the iPad.
Compared to here and over in America, what was the training like? Was it a lot different or very similar?
It was very similar, actually. You know, the standard of it, yeah, compared to Premier League was a bit slower, but it was very, very similar. And obviously going on coaching and management myself now, you notice the similarities in what, you know, they're being taught in the US or Canada or that sort of side of training to our UEFA B or UEFA A. So it was very similar. Just obviously you had to train at certain times because it could be roasting hot or freezing cold. So that changed a little bit, but no, it was very similar, really.
And the results... The resources in terms of like therapists and stuff, was it more advanced or same again?
Compared to the Premier League, it's on a par with Premier League. That's the massive thing that they did, and what we did. You know, when I went there, that's what they wanted out of me as well. They didn't also just want it on the pitch; they wanted it off the pitch. You know, they wanted it with the, the masseuses, you know, the chefs. You know, to get we got a new chef in, we changed the kitchen. You know, they built a new training ground and them experiences for me to help them along. So, yeah, they had the resources and they wanted to build on that. So it was on par with sort of with the Premier League, which is, you know, a good thing because obviously they're looking to build on that, really.
And with regards to the staffing, obviously over here, backroom staff is quite male dominant. Was it the same in America or was there more females?
There was more females than I've seen before, certainly in sort of Premier League. I'd never had a woman masseuse. Never that. We had two women masseuses. So that was new to me. We had physios that were ladies as well. So it was more influx of women, you know, within the staff, you know, and I'd always been massaged off a man. So it was strange to get it off a woman. It was very strange. So it was, it was good, man. I suppose.
That was childish in me, apologies.
But it was, that's what it was. Yeah. When you got told to go and see, or you asked a massage, and you know, it was they used to get a masseuse in. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't she worked for the club, but she had her own clinic as well. So it wasn't the physio giving you massage. It was a proper massage. You know, so it was new to me, really. I'd always go in and gone to the physio, give us a massage, really rub your calf for about 10 minutes and go, yeah, off you pop. Where this was, you know, full body and proper stretching and stuff like that. So it was new and it was childish to start off with. I was right there,
you know what? I'm going to text my agent saying, why haven't we got a masseuse? Why am I doing a white massage? This is ridiculous. He's banging trouble tonight, Liam. Honestly, he's got a list of things he's got to sort out. Before I go back to the Dons on the 4th, but I want this, I want that, I want this. I want a golf cart.
Craig Holloway is coming to say, who was your first manager in grassroots and would you take his style into your own coaching?
Craig Holloway?
Yeah.
Mm. There you go. I played with him. Good lad, Craig. My old man actually coached his older brother as well. What was his questions again? It's going to be something about him, I've got to say, isn't it?
Who was your first manager in grassroots and would you take his style into your coaching?
He's asking about Dick Morgan. I'm sure he's got to be asking about Dick Morgan at Long Lane. Would I take his management? I'd take his rants maybe or that side of it. Yeah, every now and again, that's for sure. So, Probably not the other parts, but his rants, I probably would.
And then I've got my other question on Dennis. Is basically, when you knew you was, well, I suppose, in your career, did you actually have anything put aside from yourself for when your career finished? Sort of mental health-wise, and how was your mental health once you actually then finished plan?
Have anything on the side, like business-wise?
What you was going to do once you gave up football? I mean, was there any plans what you was going to do when you gave up football? And what was your mental health like once you'd given it up? How did you cope with that day-to-day stuff not being there anymore?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I always knew I wanted to be a manager. Yeah, coach, manager. So I always had that in the back of my mind that I was going to start that before I even finished. Even from Portland, I had a little notepad that I'd write stuff in. So I had that mentality already. So it probably helped me. And when I stopped, I was ready to stop. So it wasn't sort of taken away from me like a lot of people it has done, which I'm sure it makes it very, very difficult and very, very hard. You know, I chose to stop. I chose to call it a day. And jump into management / coaching. So it made my, you know, mindset a lot easier. Do I miss playing football? Yeah, I do miss playing football and that mindset is still there, but I don't miss it on that level because I feel like it's changed. It's too robotic to me. Mm. Everything's sort of, you're told what to do and, you know, it's too robotic. There's no enjoyment still there. So, you know, for me, it was time to call it a day and that was it for me.
Well, Craig's come back in and said it's Len Reed.
Oh, Len Reed. Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, yeah. No. The answer is no.
Yeah. And then Tom's come in and said, who is...
Don't sit on the fence, Liam, mate. Don't sit on the fence then, mate.
And then someone's come in and said, who's the best player of all time?
Oh, I think.
Yeah.
Ronaldo.
Manchester United, Ronaldo.
The real one or the other one that's playing now?
Not Fat Ronaldo, not the one's fat playing now.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. That's controversial.
No,
for me, for sort of playing and watching and sort of my era, it's Ronaldo for me.
I would agree 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, obviously it's Messi and Ronaldo sort of.
Can I throw David off as well, do you reckon?
I'll be honest with you, Liam. Whenever I hear the conversation, I just sit there and turn off because I just cannot believe that there's even a comparison made between the two of them. You know,
Mark Noble, you mean? Mark Noble's a class player. I'm not having this again.
And the only reason I say that for is because, you know, Ronaldo's gone out, he's gone over into different countries, done it, been there, done it, you know, got the T-shirt, done it for his country. And as for the little magician, as they call him, he sticks in one club and where he's got all the best players in the world all around him and comes to his country.
That's what tips it for me, that Ronaldo went to different countries and, you know, the physicality of different countries and went and did it. Mm. You know, I get the Messi argument. I understand how unbelievable he is, but the part that Ronaldo's gone and done it in different countries tips it for me.
But for me,
but does his club or when he joined United tip it for him?
But the thing is when you look at those two, they always forget the best player in the world, and of course that was Dennis Bergkamp. But that's another point.
Fuck Arsenal. I thought it was Thierry Henry, to be honest.
Fuck off, Ali.
that goal against Ireland was beautiful, mate. Beautiful.
Please, well, I need to get a drink.
Although, in all fairness, in saying that, one player that I think was, I'm not saying best player in that sort of category, but one sort of player that was outstanding as well for me was David Rowcastle. Did you ever get the chance to play against him?
I didn't, no. And do you know what? I didn't see a lot of him. Obviously, the person I was watching was Ian Wright, but I got clips of David Rowcastle when he was raw and unbelievable. And, you know, it was, you know, obviously... God rest his soul, but obviously it was an amazing player in that team at that time.
Yeah. And when you
play against Stevie G, Liam?
I did, yeah. Played against him a few times, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was absolutely monster. Was it amazing?
Stevie
G was good. He weren't amazing. He weren't one of my people I watched, but he was the heartbeat of that team. You know, everything went through him. He was unreal. So
Stevie G or Frank Lampard?
Oh. Right at the end, a tough question. Crikey.
It's Frank for me.
And me. Yeah,
he's only saying that because I don't like
you two are fucking a little bromance going on. Oh, I love Ronaldo. Oh, Lamp's just really great. Oh, West Ham are shit. Oh, I'm going to sign off in a minute. I rushed out of work to get here today.
No, I like West Ham. I like West Ham. But Frank Tippett.
We don't want your pity now.
Because of his goals. His goals tip it for me.
Absolutely, 100%.
20 goals a season for a midfielder.
Yeah, you ever kick him? That's the real question, isn't it?
Couldn't get near him. Of course, he's mad. He's already scored and run off celebrating by the time I got near him.
I don't think we all agree on this one, but most overrated player.
Ooh.
Theo Walcott. Stick that in your pipe and smoke it.
Well, I would disagree with you, but no, that's not mine.
Most overrated player.
Yeah.
Good one. Got to come back to you. Most overrated player. Wow.
You really stumped him. Hey, David, you know what it is? He's thinking, who can I not offend right now? Who can I say you won't go absolutely crazy?
I'm thinking of not saying myself who I was going to put out there. Christ, that's what I'm thinking for.
I'll stick a name out there that everybody will turn off as soon as I say it. But for me, the most overrated player
Neymar.
I've seen in my thing is Wayne Rooney.
I don't know about this. This is getting very heated now, this show.
Dave, that's like...
No, mine's Neymar.
Oh,
mine's Neymar.
Nice tattoos, though, isn't he, mate? Honestly, they're a work of art.
Lovely tattoos. He's a great Instagram sensation. Brilliant. Yeah.
Got good hair as well. Got a nice little earring thing going on. Star wise, I'm all over it.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I wouldn't like to be one-on-one.
Do it myself, Mia.
So last question. I mean. When you go back to America, if you've gone back to America, and when you go back to America, how do you get seen by your side there, you know, and Portland Timbers? And I mean, how are you seen? Are you seen like it's David, you know, almost like David Beckham walking back into somewhere or something? You know, have you got that real star status when you walk back into?
I'd love to say yeah. I don't know. I suppose that would probably be a question for them. But I think, you know, obviously the time that I spent there and, you know, the way they treated myself and the family was incredible. It was like a second home. So I'd like to hope so that I'd get a good reception. I'd like to hope I'd get a couple of claps from the crowd, that's for sure. Put it that way. I probably couldn't say that about my English clubs, but, you know, I'd certainly hope I'd get a few claps, that's for sure.
You wouldn't get any at the minute, mate. There's no one in there. Don't want to disappoint you.
That's the abuse, see? So yeah. I mean, Courtney, Christ, that's
yeah,
what you get.
Not the quick, yeah. but listen, Liam, a massive thank you for coming on the show with the girls tonight. Really appreciate it. It's been a great hour and a bit to chat to you. I'd love to see you come on again if you get time later on to talk us a bit more about your coaching career as well when you go back there to Villa and so forth. Well, that'd be fantastic in the coming weeks. And of course, massive thank you to the three girls, to the Cray twins at the bottom, of course, Courtney and Ali, and of course, and well, to Emily up there as well. Only one or two F-bombs tonight. But next week, we've had Ali's hero, or one of Ali's heroes last week. We've had Emily's hero this week. Next week is my all-time hero. He's going to be joining us next week. And I'll tell you, I'm buzzing because I cannot wait for next week. Next week at 7:30 next week, joining us is the man that was known as God. And he will be joining us next week on the show. Mr. Matt Letizia will be joining me and the three girls next week on the show. So he's having a warm-up show with Billy Cove, and then he's going to come up to the main event with us next Friday night. And it's going to be a great, great night to have a chat with somebody and like him as well, as it has been today with Liam as well. So if you want to join us next week, come and join us next week. We'll say we've got Matt Letizia with us next week. Me and Keith, we'll be back on Monday night with the D&K show. But to everybody that's been with us tonight, who's been watching as well, a massive thank you and good night.
Good night, everyone.
Bye.